All views, opinions, and comments expressed herein are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of StoneX Group Incorporated and or its subsidiaries. This content does not constitute an offer or solicitation to open a trading account, to trade in any specific product, or to engage with any services provided by StoneX Group Incorporated or its subsidiaries. This content is not intended for residents of any particular country or jurisdictions where such content is prohibited.
Welcome to the Trading Global Macro Podcast from StoneX, where we unpack the complex forces driving global financial markets. I'm John Kicklider, Global Head of Content at StoneX.
And I'm Matt Weller, Global Head of Market Research for StoneX's self-directed brands. Each week in this podcast, we explore the macroeconomic trends and geopolitical events shaping Forex, equities, commodities, interest rates, and more. What's the topic today, John?
So for our inaugural topic, I think it's most appropriate to talk about risk appetite, sentiment. Now, sentiment is, or risk appetite is thrown out as a term. Everyone uses it. And I think we use it in the context of the market that we participate or the market we're observing, or just casually as we see, you know, the Chiron flash that the S&P 500 set record highs. But I want to say that risk appetite is a broader financial market influence, and it actually spills over to the economy. It's not just, you know, looking at the stock market and saying it's risk on. Yes, it is encompassed there, but it's not the extent. And in fact, for the viewers of this podcast, I do want to share something that I like to utilize in some of my content. I have a little spectrum of key assets, and it lays out where in the spectrum risk or markets actually stand when it comes to risk appetite, when risk is on or risk are off, fear and greed are the extremes of that spectrum. And really everything is going to be encompassed. I don't think there is any asset or any market that would extract itself from sentiment and risk on or risk off. It will be swept up, especially the more severe the shift in sentiment is. But on the end of safe havens, you have the likes of the U.S. dollar, the Swiss franc, and the Japanese yen are also considered currencies that are safe havens. You also have treasuries and gold. I mean, those are traditional safe havens. And then on the other end, you have high return, high risk assets. So those are stocks, and high yield, fixed income, emerging market assets, Bitcoin. Even though I know people think it's a safe haven, I think it's still very much on the extreme scale of the sentiment spectrum. And then when you get to a very strong movement in risk appetite, you will see those assets align to that typical spectrum. It doesn't always, like if sentiment is fairly moderate, you're not going to have an extreme move for these markets. But the more intense our confidence gets or fear gets, fear to greed, you're going to have a lot of these markets align. So I wanted to align that. And in the context of just the remarkable, unrelenting drive and benchmark risks like here, the S&P 500 is, I think it's a good place setter for just general risk trends, marching to record highs. And just, I think it goes against the context of the market saying this is the most hated rally. I've seen that's quoted a lot. And to be fair, they say that every persistent run, and you have it against this contrast of fundamental questions. There's always going to be fundamental questions or threats or risks. I'm not saying they're not real, but sentiment doesn't always have to abide by those concerns. So what do you think this is, Matt?
Yeah, so focusing specifically on the S&P, there's no denying that this rally has been very impressive off of the sort of Liberation Day lows in mid-April. And to me, though, I do think there's at least some fundamental backing, which I think is always the case when we see these big rallies. Things like earnings are holding in there, and a lot of that's being driven at the top end by these magnificent seven companies and their spend on AI. It's sort of this big incestuous relationship where they keep investing for more AI chips, which boosts NVIDIA sales, which in turn optimism around AI remains high. So companies are bidding up the stocks that are investing the most in it, the superscalers. So I think that is a big factor. And if you look at the most recent earnings reports, they were generally strong. Perhaps some of that is pricing in optimism about the future and the efficiencies that will be delivered by AI. But I absolutely think excuse me, I absolutely think that is a big factor driving the stock market higher. Also, we're in a pretty supportive policy environment. The Federal Reserve's cutting interest rates. We have a pretty loose fiscal policy, speaking specifically about the U.S., but also in Europe, too. We see these purse springs being loosened. We see greater deficit spending. And I think all that money being injected into the system has to find a home somewhere. And a lot of it's being found in these risk assets. So I think those are some of the key factors that are supporting stocks specifically and just risk appetite more generally. Would you agree with those? And is there something I'm overlooking as the inevitable optimist on this podcast?
Yeah, I'm definitely the cynic of the two of us. But you're absolutely right. There are reasons. There's always going to be reasons for being optimistic. There's always going to be hope or conviction somewhere. It's just the question about where that critical balance is. I mean, you mentioned the tech drive and the core assets. And I think a really good example of like that, I think it's concentration of exposure. You can look at something like the NASDAQ 100 versus the Dow. So the tech heavy index versus the blue chips, the stoic group. And I think historically, when you look at it from the big picture, and for the video watchers, this is a monthly chart of the NASDAQ, the Dow ratio, and it's pushing to record highs. It's that concentration effect and that speculative drive that I think it makes us focus on the positives and push off the negatives. And I think in part, speaking of looser monetary policy, back in the post financial crisis, great financial crisis era of 2008, 2009, we had just a really aggressive easing policy across the globe. The major central banks, not just cutting rates to zero, but they would also inject and infuse massive amounts of stimulus through quantitative easing. And that's where that expectation that central banks are going to be there to offer the central bank put came into belief. And I think that still carries over to this day. The question is, when will these central banks or even governments step in? Are they just going to like be extremely flighty every time there's a little pullback in a market? Is this the cue to get involved? Or are they going to allow for some healthy pullback? Because concentration of risk exposure is probably not a good thing for the healthy activity of a financial system. It gets you into very clear quarters and you're draining liquidity out of areas where it could really use that liquidity because everyone wants to chase the Mag 7 or like a crypto asset rather than just evenly distributed across a more stable market. And I think that kind of environment can create a dry tender. Like really drought-like conditions, low volatility, low liquidity conditions, such that something that is substantial enough to rise to the occasion of being a crisis or a risk can turn into just a risk to a crisis and then run through markets that have low liquidity and can see those massive price moves on the way down. Obviously, the massive market cap stocks might not do it, but what about the small cap stocks or going out to other risk-based assets? What about the less liquid other assets out there? I think that's more of the risk. The question is like the balance. Where is that balance? How do you find that balance? Is it by happenstance? Is there a pattern that we can see in financial markets or economy? And that's where I think most of my concern is.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it ties into this idea of just increasing polarization. And we can see that with the companies, as you mentioned here, the Magnificent Seven are an unprecedented share of the overall index due to their weighting. But we can also see it in the general economy where we might be seeing some, I would say, yellow flags, for example, about the labor market. But a lot of these concerns are about the lower end consumers, and certainly those are legitimate concerns. But at the end of the day, it's the upper class that's spending all this money into the economy. So that, I think, is keeping the economy afloat, just like these highly concentrated companies are keeping the broader indices afloat. So it's always worthwhile to think about when that might end. I think a lot of it for the stock market is around this AI trade, which has been just an absolutely massive move. And if you're skeptical of that, maybe that's where you start to look for signs of a reversal. But that trend's been in place for a while. So from a trading perspective, it's something that I might look to see some key moving averages breaking, see the trend starting to change, and then using that to increase the probabilities of a pullback of a bear market, if you will, rather than just saying, hey, this is too crazy today. I'm going to get out. I'm going to go short the market or something like that. And then also back on the economic side, if we see that happen, that's where that relationship between the stock market and upper income consumers kind of bears fruit, in that as long as stocks are rising, people are, especially at the upper end, are feeling rich. So they're inclined to keep buying. And so I think there is risk that you highlight there. It's just a matter of when that breaks, when that risk comes to the fore. And that'll be something I'm sure we'll be watching in this podcast, but also we'll be covering on our websites and really just trying to identify when that turning point is. I don't see any signs that it's here yet, but it is always important to be considering.
So fundamental drives, the pickup in the U.S. unemployment rate and the cooling, or at least the less specific concern about inflation in the United States, and that dual mandate for the Federal Reserve, that puts it into an economic, a tentative economic concern. I don't think there's any crises that you would see in that data just yet. That's such a slow move, though. And markets, when they turn quite fast. So that economic consideration versus the observational perspective on the financial side, what would you look for? Would you seem to be very, very much a believer in the AI drive. So that's, I have NVIDIA. Would you look at something like NVIDIA as like a leader from a topple from the top, and then see it cascade down into other high market cap shares? So starting with NVIDIA and then going maybe to the NASDAQ 100. And if that starts to pull back, then seeing broader equities and then seeing if it spills over into risk-based assets and spread. Would that be something that you look at?
Yeah, it's always going to be markets that lead. So if you're waiting for the unemployment rate to meaningfully spike to recessionary levels or inflation to drop sharply, those tend to be lagging indicators that the market will usually sniff out beforehand. And I do think it's these leaders at the top that, as long as they're remaining in that uptrend, then that's going to keep economic optimism around. And that's also going to keep, of course, people bullish about the stock market and risk sentiment more broadly. An interesting dynamic here is every sort of earnings season, I bite my fingernails to see, like, is this the quarter where the bloom comes off the rose for this AI trade? And the way the companies report, NVIDIA's essentially last. It's 3 weeks after everyone else. But its biggest customers, Amazon and Google and Facebook, all report beforehand. So I think that might be where you start to see if there's a coordinated miss. All those companies saying they're going to pull back for a little bit on their investment because they're not seeing that return. I think that could drive NVIDIA long before it reports its earnings. And then that's where we start to see that trend potentially change. Obviously, that may not be how it plays out, but that's certainly what I see as the most prominent way, the most likely way that this trend changes. And so far, we're not seeing it, but that could, of course, change in a dime here in the next month. So it's worth watching closely, but the trend is your friend until it ends, as they say. And I think that's my general philosophy.
Absolutely. I totally agree. We got to be mindful in these really optimistic times, not to advantage, but at the same time, it's when the conditions are quiet where you should be the most cautious and be mindful of the markets rather than tuning out and walking away, especially as we move in these fall-based trade conditions and out of the summer doldrums. Thanks for tuning in to the Trading Global Macro Podcast from StoneX. If you enjoyed today's discussion, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm John Kicklighter.
And I'm Matt Weller. Join us again next week for more insights into the trends and events shaping the world's financial markets. Thank you.